Afternoon Show with Christian Arcand and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Well, welcome in. WEEI Afternoons, I'm Christian Arcand, Andy Hart, not here at Fenway with me, but I'm coming to you live from the Ford Fenway Clubhouse Studio. And it's brought to you by our New England Ford dealers. The freedom of choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150, official truck of the Boston Red Sox. Andy Hart from Parts Unknown here as well. We got you, Andy.
Hi, how are you?
We've got him. We've got Andy. Great. Terrific. And we also have maybe a little bit of optimism in the air. That was Mike Mayocco, who is on with Tommy Curran there on the Patriots Talk podcast and discussing this upcoming matchup here with the San Francisco 49ers. And saying, maybe not that the Patriots are going to win this game, but that it's a pretty good time to be facing the 49ers with all the injuries that they have and everything else. He went on to say some more things, and we'll get to that. But that's where we want to start here. But before we even get to any of that, did you happen to hear the Dietrich Wise interview just before we were on here? Did you hear that with Jones and Keefe today, Andy?
I did not. What did I miss?
So they asked Dietrich Wise who his favorite San Francisco 49er was, because that's a thing they do in the four-pack, right? On the Friday four-pack, they have a favorite player from the opposing team. So they asked Dietrich Wise, and Brian, if you have this, they asked him who his favorite 49er was, and just, we thought Tommy Curran does long pregnant pauses. Listen to this.
Do you have a favorite 49er or a player you like to watch on San Francisco when you were younger?
Do-to-do.
I'm going to say no.
That sounds like a no.
Hello?
Yeah, that's a no.
Oh,
nobody?
Wow.
That was 7 seconds. 7 seconds of ignoring the question before finally coming back and just saying, yeah, it's going to be a no. I don't have one. I'm not. He was there the whole time, which they alluded to, which I thought made it that much funnier. But that was Tommy Curran on his worst day doesn't let it sit that long. That was that was truly spectacular.
And that seems almost personal and pointed in nature.
Maybe, yeah. Like, maybe a little bit.
That might change my pick. If Dietrich Wise has a lifelong vendetta against the San Francisco 49ers.
A blood feud with San Francisco.
Right. Like, is there something I need to know here? Because that might
affect I'm going to say no.
That sounds like a no.
Might be.
Yeah, probably not.
At first, I just assumed he got cut off.
Right, that's what I thought. I thought, oh, he must have dropped off. They thought that, too. They thought they lost the call. But no, he was there. He was there.
No, he hates them. This
did
is...
not... Either he hates them or he hates Jones and Keefe. Maybe it's a little bit of both.
Hello?
Well, I mean, that would be understandable.
Certainly. Now, with Jones, and I've worked with Jones, obviously, for a long time. Jones now has had that happen to him. He's had a toilet been flushed on him in an interview with Stephon Gilmore. In the middle of the interview, he just flushed the toilet.
That's a no.
And Danny Amendola hung up on him once. So now, whenever he interviews a Patriot for some reason, there's this sort of thing. I don't know if they all know about
it. Do you think
they
talk about him?
Right, yeah, like, hey, yeah, you're talking to Jones today? All right, let's do something funny. You flush the toilet. You hang up on him. You just don't answer one of the questions that he asks for 7 seconds. I think there's a thing going on there with the Patriots and Jones. I do.
Next question.
Right? I mean, I don't know that that's happened to anybody else. I mean, Belichick used to be tough asking questions, too, right? He used to be, he'd stonewall people. But it seems like with Jones, there's this sort of concerted thing. Like, you know, they're all kind of in. Let's mess around with Jones a little bit. I think there's something to that.
I'm going
to
say no.
Why are we taking Keefe off the hook? It's a tandem there, so they're a couple, they're a pair, they're a tag team.
That's true. Jones did ask that particular question though, and also Jones had the previous things happen there with Gilmore and Amendola. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly who was with him at the time, but yeah.
Rich Keefe has a history with John Farrell that would.
That's a good point. Right here in this studio, he did.
Some people don't care for his line of questioning or tone of questioning at times. I will say, it was a good thing he's on the line because he's not exactly Keon White. There's more smile, but Dietrich Wise is an imposing figure in his own right. And if he if that were in person and he were just staring at you for 7 seconds, I feel like that would feel like 107 seconds.
7 seconds? That's how long, like, a bull rider.
You gotta stay on a bull. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
That is
the greatest
time
in the world. So that's interesting. I feel like we need to get a little deeper into that because
do you have a favorite 49er or a player you like to watch on San Francisco when you were younger?
So great. Nothing.
Hello?
I would have thought at this point after 3 seconds.
No. That sounds like
there's no way, right?
Hello?
Yeah, that's a no.
Oh,
nobody?
Yeah. Wow.
So can we reverse engineer this?
Keith surprised at the end too. Wow.
Hilarious.
Well, is it possible that, like, you and I were talking about this, kind of that late 80s, early 90s, you were into baseball cards, you were into, you know, early fantasy baseball, maybe you had
right.
it, but could his age align with a gap in the 40s? Like, they had that crappy phase. Is it possible that they were just not a notable, because we all think of, like, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, but then you can get into T.O. or whatever, Colin Kaepernick, I mean, whoever you want. They had various right. Super Bowl eras.
Well, he does sort of continue and answer the question if you want me to play it.
Oh, yeah. What do you get there?
That's a no.
Oh, nobody?
Yeah. Wow.
No Jerry Rice? You didn't like Jerry Rice?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying he's my favorite player. I watched him, his highlights, things like that. I used to watch Armstead and DeForest Buckner when I was in college.
There you go.
So nice. They
not going back.
They're like a few years older than me, so I kind of watched them when I was coming into the league. But
all right, so fine. Then he did kind of answer the question, but he didn't say any of them were like his favorite. So who was your favorite 49er? There was nothing.
That's just no. That was.
I
silence.
Am not even going to acknowledge that. I'm not going to. It's like you didn't even ask me that. I thought that was a tremendous piece of content today.
There's also the possibility you brought up Belichick. He may have been pulling a Belichick, and for all I know, like checking his email or something at the time. He's like, "Oh shoot, was there a question? What was the question?"
That's a no. That's a
49ers, yeah, the 49ers. Great, I love them all. All very good. Jerry Rice, right. Yeah, whatever, I don't know. So there you go. But yeah, that was excellent. And maybe, hey, listen, any Dietrich Wise prop bets we can get in on here if there's some added motivation with this team or some sort of feud, as you alluded to, that maybe goes back that we don't even know about. That could be the inside information that you only get here on WEEI Afternoons. 617-779-7937 is the phone number here. Let's hit on what Mike Mayocco said there with Tommy Curran, which is that this is a good time for the Patriots to be playing the 49ers. You can't really deny that, right? I mean, this is definitely, in terms of for this team and for that team, they have a bunch of guys banged up. They have a very important skill position offensive players banged up. And if you believe, you know, if you believe the headlines here, they're 1-2 and a team that is looking to get right. But it's hard to get right when your best players are all out. Patriots are some injuries themselves here as well. But do you agree that this is the right time or a good time for the Patriots to be facing this team?
You tell me I can't argue against that, and I say, why can't I? And I shall show you. No, I absolutely think that your potential advantage is gone. This is not a trap game for the 49ers. They have a losing record. They lost their last game. They gagged it away. They're not playing good football. They don't have their best players. So any hope you had of, like, sneaking in the back door and them not realizing you're actually a competitive football team, that's gone. What was the quote from Bosa? We need to feel this loss last week. Mm-hmm. They are emotionally invested in trying not to watch. They're one of the many teams, by the way. There's a bunch of teams that are like kind of on the brink. Is our season getting out of control in a negative direction? Like 0-3, 1-2. If we go 1-3 or other teams go 0-4 like the Bengals, your season might be digging a hole you can't get out of. And I think they know that in San Francisco. And I think that's actually a bad thing for the New England Patriots. And I would also argue that the reports of their demise are a little bit exaggerated. Their starting quarterback is starting. They have a running back who's run really well. They don't have the guy that, you know, could be a league MVP type candidate or whatever.
Yeah, they have a pretty good running back. Yeah, I wouldn't say he's great, but they have a pretty good running back.
One of their wide receivers is out. The guy you wanted to trade for and give $100 million whatever dollars to is still there. And some other guy that no one's ever heard of just had 175 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns. Their tight end, who is one of the better all-around tight ends in football and the centerpiece of a documentary in the offseason, is feeling better than he's felt in a while. Sounds like he's going to play. He's a little weird, so I don't know if you want to take what he says at face value. But
banged up, disappear sometimes too. I mean, there's been plenty
but
of times
also
where he hasn't turned up.
Could also eat the lunch of the middle of this Patriots defense that has
like
been
those two Jets
poor.
Tight ends did, and they did that. I mean, that was, and they're not as good as George Kittle.
They are not George Kittle. So I actually think this is a bad, bad spot for the Patriots. I think there's a wounded, literally wounded 49ers team that is dangerous right now and looking to save their own season, and in doing so are probably looking to prove a point against a team that is quite inferior and also quite banged up. Like, we're going to get into it later. We may have to learn yet another left tackle. I know you're all excited because he's huge, so we got that going for us. I don't know if he can play. He's a practice squatter. Who knows if he can actually play? And there's all these other, like, little injuries that are popping up in the injury report, guys that are key figures for a team that doesn't have a lot of talent, that are big names, critical players that are limited in practice. So, no, I do not think the 49ers are ripe for the picking. I think they are ripe to lay a beating.
They are going to be motivated, absolutely. Aren't the Patriots trying to save their season, too? Like, is there no thought to that?
We'll
like, is that... I mean, because if you take away the Niners, not their all their best players, as you said, a bunch of them are still playing. But if you take away a few of their important guys, which clearly some of them aren't playing. Although Samuel practiced yesterday, didn't he?
Yes. But
didn't Debo practice?
He did practice. Seems like he's one of those guys that's building this week to then return next week kind of thing.
Well, that's sort of overlooking the Patriots a bit then, isn't it? yeah, we'll build you up here. We don't need you against New England, but we'll make sure you're ready for next week.
I think that's a traditional tactic on the injury report. If you really look at guys that did not practice, then they're limited sometimes late 1 week, don't play, and then limited to start the next week and build towards playing. I think it's kind of a traditional recovery arc, but... Okay, so the 49ers are banged up. McCaffrey's not out there. Fine. Debo's not out there. If you do a draft, I always love to do this.
Yes.
You know, NBA series, we do this all the time. Who's the first pick? Who's the second pick? How many picks before you get to the other team kind of thing? Aren't most of the picks coming from the 49ers still?
Yeah, I'd say the first four or five maybe would come from the 49ers, I'd say.
So I'm not going to shed a tear. I'm not going to shed a tear. Oh, they're so banged up.
That's three. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Bosa and Warner are two of the best players in football.
Right.
Absolute best players in football. Brandon,
I like their safety, but I don't know if I like him more than the Patriots safeties. I think what's his name, Hufanga? Like he's good, but I don't know if he's much better than Duggar or Peppers.
It might not be much better, but at least you have a debate. How about the wide receiver position? Who's the first
wide receiver
drafted?
Is not even close. I mean, you take Ayuk first, then you take probably take Jennings second, even though he's only really had that one game. It's better than anything the Patriots guys have done.
That's
in the offensive
month.
Line. You'd mostly go that way too.
Trent Williams,
might
have heard of him.
Got paid and is going to be playing for sure. Kittle banged up versus Hunter Henry. I mean, you know, that could be debatable.
Okay,
there.
I'll give you a wash.
Running back, I'd say, is maybe advantage Patriots.
I don't know about that advantage. Does he hold on to the ball or does he get it out of his hands quickly as Alex Van Pelt wants people to do?
That's something that Ramondre Stevenson's certainly been doing. I don't know the fumble stats for Jordan Mason, but I think coming into the season, most people had Stevenson ranked ahead of him for sure.
Sure. But I would also question... So we got talent. We would say talent edge San Francisco, correct?
Definitely.
How about scheme?
Scheme advantage San Francisco.
Yeah, probably in a blowout, maybe more than the talent.
Yes, although, I mean, their scheme didn't look great in the second half against the Rams, and that's not exactly a team that's operating at full strength either. What?
What kind of game is that?
That was a shootout.
No,
a shootout type of game.
Division
and
games,
a division gets true.
The
and
knowledge,
they
the intimacy, those are weird. We've seen them for years in this division and others. So I think that plays a factor there. To think that they're going to meet their scheme the same way that a common foe in the division does is probably a little bit overly optimistic.
That's fair. I do think that the Patriots defense probably is looking at this week like a week where they have a lot to prove. They've had two straight games now where quarterbacks really carved them up. I think that in the same kind of, not the exact same way because it's just one side of the ball, but like, the defense, I think, has the kind of pride that you're talking about with the 49ers that they have. They think we're better than this. We should be able to go out there and show everybody that. And I think this defense is probably going to take that same kind of mentality, right? Like, here we are. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be this good defense. We were good against Cincinnati in that first week. And here we are coming up against a banged-up 49ers team with a QB who this guy, Host One, doesn't think is particularly all that good. And we should be able to limit them. And that's something that I think they're going to be just as motivated to do as the Niners are going to be motivated to pound the Patriots. But we'll see which one ends up winning out there.
They definitely have motivation to prove something. Motivation that was apparently lacking last Thursday night. And if you believe Gerard Mayo, there was good energy on the practice field. He talked, that was like the first thing he mentioned in his press conference this morning, was the energy on the practice field and wrapping things up before they get on a plane and head to San Francisco. But, you know, I have this old cliche, Paul Perillo hated it. There's two problems. There's a want-to problem and a can't problem.
Right.
I think the Patriots defense will want to shut down the 49ers and want to stop them. I don't know if they can. They couldn't when they needed to against Seattle. They couldn't against the Jets. And the game against Cincinnati, they were pretty pretty fortunate the way that played out. So I actually think if there's an area of this team that has underperformed to start the season, underperformed from expectations, it's not Jacoby Brissett. It's not the offensive line. It might not even be the receivers. It's probably the defense. And the pass defense in particular that has underperformed.
They were the only ones with any expectations whatsoever coming into the season. You're right. And that has been an underperformance so far. Absolutely. We read about this about, a month ago or so, right around when the show first started. Happy 1 month anniversary, by the way. It was one of the Niners.
Too many more.
Don't think we do. the Niners.
The newsletter.
Nope. One of yes, we did this week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
one of
our clips
is in there.
Woo!
I know, pretty exciting. I forget what the guy's name is, but one of the Niners beat writers said he had this big scoop about how Shanahan and what's his name, Lynch, are both really in the hot seat right now.
Yeah.
And how they're spending all this money, and they get all this money for Trent Williams and all this money for Brandon Ayuk, and they extended Christian McCaffrey, and they're just passing out money. Basically a Wick Irv Grosbeck situation right here is what you're getting. It seemed like if they don't make a deep run, maybe even compete in a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl this year, that could mean some sort of consequences for either one of those guys. Now, Schefter poo-pooed that when we asked him about it. But this was a local report, and I don't know. I mean, I was reading it, and I was thinking about what's happening here with the Celtics and looking at their books, and it's like, yeah, you know, that's a team with a lot of guaranteed money on the books right there that's just sort of plodding along and hasn't won anything yet. And I do wonder, like, you get off to a bad start this year. What were we just saying about the Cowboys dropping to 1-3? Like, that means you got to fire the coach if you're 1-3 losing to the Giants. If the Niners fall to 1-3 after losing to the Patriots, I bet you start hearing that again.
I don't know if you'll hear firings, but there's definitely going to be alarms going off in San Francisco. And the financial part you're referencing only gets harder because Brock Purdy going to get paid. After
exactly,
this season,
right. You're
going to start talking about paying Brock Purdy. And I think he's making $1 million or just under $1 million this year.
Can't afford to live in San Francisco.
So yeah, you're talking about him getting a, 50-fold raise, 40-something-fold raise moving forward potentially. So yeah, I think there will be a lot of criticism. But I also think that Kyle Shanahan has a reputation, an aura about him. Like, there are the Shimes of the world think he's a genius and they love him and like he's the greatest thing ever, and you know they probably play your side of the street in terms of Purdy, that Purdy's not that good, he's just riding Kyle Shanahan's coattails. But you're right, if we're gonna say, oh, Zach Taylor's on Bill watch because they're 0-3 and Brian Daboll's on Bill watch because he's 1-3 now, and these other guys and the Cowboys were on life support with McCarthy, well, why don't we hold Kyle Shanahan to the same standard? He's got to look. Now, the injuries may save him. I think people may point to, you're talking about money. They spent a lot of money, and a lot of that money isn't playing, you know, with Debo being out, Christian
McCaffrey.
Yeah,
that'll help Lynch.
Out.
Will that help Shanahan so much? Like, maybe it won't.
I think
maybe
it will.
Won't help either of them.
I think it'll help. I don't think they are going to be on the hot seat any, because I think both of them will be scooped up immediately.
I agree with that.
And maybe as a tandem. Some owner might say, yeah, they didn't win it, but they built one of the best rosters and they always seem to be in it. And I'm, you know, if I'm David Tepper and I keep taking bad swings at this, like, well, that seems like a tandem that's proven they can work out there.
Right.
I think they would be scooped up very, very quickly.
All right, 617-779-7937 is your phone number. It's a Patriots Friday here, live at the Ford Fenway Clubhouse, which is where I'm sitting right now. It's a little It's a little morose around here, Andy. You're not missing a whole lot. I mean, everybody's packing it in. Everybody's backing up all their. I think that I saw the Netflix guys there packing up all their cameras and stuff. Haven't seen a lot of Tampa Bay fans walking around. Usually you see the opposing fans. It's a beautiful day. So you'd see them out here in the streets checking out Boston, checking out Lansdowne Street. Not a lot of buzz here this weekend, unfortunately, as the Red Sox have been eliminated. However, I anticipate that'll change tonight, if not tonight, over the next couple of days, as it is the send-off for Joe Castiglione. And I read today that there's going to be this big thing for him on Sunday during the game. It's going to be simulcast on NESN. All that's going to be pretty cool.
Can you believe it?
I cannot. I honestly can't. I can't believe Joe Castiglione's retiring. Like, I remember the announcement was set in and everything, but now that it's like we're at that weekend, now that we're actually here, it's weird to think about.
I'll never hear swinging a pop-up ever again. Well, I mean, I'll hear it as a drop.
You'll hear it.
But not the real version. I do wonder, it's funny you brought up Netflix and the cameras and the documentary. I do wonder, because I feel like he should be a significant part of that. His voice should be a part, especially with it coinciding with the end of his career.
Sure.
And how important he's been to the franchise. And the way we always talk about, he can impart his feelings about a game or a trend without really saying anything, just based on the tone of his voice. I feel like he should be a significant voice in that Netflix documentary.
He got off me. We ain't tripping about that.
Good. Very good, Joe. That's it. This is the last three games that you're going to hear Joe Castiglione, full-time anyway, calling games. Now, that's one thing I've been thinking about. He's like, oh, at least for full-time, you're not going to hear him anymore. How many like guest games do you think he's going to do? Is he going to just pop out whenever and just do like a game here and there? Because I was wondering about that.
If I get my way, if you're right and they do nothing and they're another mediocre team next year looking to miss the playoffs for the fourth straight season, I guess he might enjoy retirement. But if I get my way and they make significant upgrades, and this is a team that's literally playing really important baseball in September and October of next, like a really good baseball team competing for the division, I think that might inject a little more reason for him to get back into the season. So it's
like
on you.
Bring
no
back
pressure.
To the playoffs?
The playoffs, but even like meaningful
playoffs?
Run. You know, Yankees, if the Yankees and the Sox are battling for the division, maybe you can get some of those in August or whenever that would be. So no pressure, Craig Breslow, but not only do you have to rebuild a baseball team, but how much Joe Castiglione takes part in this franchise in the future is resting on your offseason.
Yeah, no problem. That's really no big deal at all. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got room for you here on a Patriots Friday. We'll continue with our Patriots talk. Alex Van Pelt spoke yesterday. We'll even talk about a Patriots path to victory, which I believe exists. And what would a 2-2 start mean for the quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, and for the head coach, Jerod Mayo? We'll get to all of that right after Brian Frazelco tells you what's trending.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Red Sox begin their final series of the season tonight when they host the Tampa Bay Rays at Fenway Park. First pitch is at 7:10. You can hear the call of the game right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Nick Pivetta will get the start against the Rays' Taj Bradley. Our coverage will begin at 6:10 with the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show with Joe Weil. The Bruins fall to 1-2 in preseason action after last night's 5-2 loss to the Rangers in New York. Goaltender Brandon Bussey, he got the start and gave up 4 goals on 32 shots. Brett Harrison and Mark Kostelec, they were the two goal scorers for the Bruins. The Bees' preseason schedule will continue tonight when the Bees are in Philadelphia to play the Flyers. Puck drop of that game is at 7 o'clock. Patriots will be in San Francisco for Sunday's game against the 49ers this weekend. Kickoff is at 4:05. The Niners are 10.5-point favorites. Last night on Thursday Night Football, the Dallas Cowboys got the 20-15 win over the New York Giants. Dak Prescott threw 2 touchdowns in the win. Tomorrow afternoon, the Boston College Eagles will play Western Kentucky. Kickoff at Alumni Stadium will be at noon. You can hear the call of the game right here on 93.7 WEEI FM with coverage beginning at 11:30. And finally, tomorrow night, the New England Revolution host Nashville SC. Kickoff from Gillette Stadium is at 7:30. I'm Brian Frazelco. That's what's trending on WEEI and on WEEI.com.
That was Alex Van Pelt, offensive coordinator of your New England Patriots, who are taking on the San Francisco 49ers in the Bay Area this weekend. A 4 o'clock game. A rare 4 o'clock game here for this team. Most of their games are at 1 o'clock, but they'll be in the late afternoon window here this coming Sunday. A get-the-ball-out-quick kind of game, he says. Thoughts on that, Andy Hart? I know you've been wanting to talk about this since we heard this cut.
Well, the snarky part of me says every game is a get-the-ball-out-of-your-hands-quick game if you play.
I like how you say the snarky part of you like there's another part of you.
There's, I'm layered. I'm like an onion. I'll make you cry, but I taste good when I'm fried. There's a lot going on in me, and I just that's the snarky part. The other part is, yeah, you're damn right. You have options in the passing game to get rid of the ball quickly, whether it's DeMario Douglas, whether it's Antonio Gibson or Ramondre Stevenson out of the backfield, whether it's even Hunter Henry. Like, this is a team that should be built to throw the ball quickly enough, and that puts this game a little bit more, I would say, on Jacoby Brissett. This is, and I think we all were not, I don't know, not we all, some of us think maybe he's coming to the end of the road or the end of the rope with his hold on the starting quarterback.
Starting
job.
The season, yeah.
Like, I think this is an important game for him because I do believe that Bosa's, you know, we've done it to a Bosa in New England before. Remember when Tom Brady was like against the Chargers and it was like, get the ball, and Bosa was frustrated, mic'd up. He's like, I'm getting there in 1 point, whatever. And he's like, well, yeah, the ball's gone in 1 point, whatever, too. And I'm not saying Jacoby Brissett is Tom Brady or this line's even as good as that line, whatever. But get rid of the ball quickly. So run the football, short passing game, quick passing game. Those are going to be, you know, I know there was some stuff about screen passes and we'll get into that. Like, screen them. Do what you need to do. Figure out a way. And that's Jacoby Brissett and that's Alex Van Pelt. But, yeah, I agree with it on the surface. But I also think some of this stuff is easier said than done. They have some pretty good linebackers that fly around. So sometimes when you're trying to get rid of the ball quickly, you throw it a little too quickly, and it could lead to problems, mistakes, and turnovers.
Yeah, especially if they know that's all you can do, especially if they right. know that you can't go down the field or take, you know, big shots deep down the sideline. Like, that's how you set yourself up to be defended that way. And as for the screen thing, Sean McGuire over at Nesson has a whole breakdown of this. Alex Van Pelt back in August said that he thought the Patriots, or he hoped the Patriots, would be the best screen team in the league. Like, they'd be the best team at throwing screens in the entire league. The Patriots are not the best screen team. They've attempted 8 screens in 3 games. This is according to PFF, your favorite. They've completed 6 passes on 8 dropbacks, gained 61 yards, and they grade better on all other passing concepts, including play action, I should say. Every single other type of pass they've been better at than the screen, which, if you think about it, is kind of amazing, because the one good play through the air I can think of all year was that screen pass to Hunter Henry. Remember that little sidearm flick where he picked up like 35, 40 yards, whatever it was? Like, that was... Yep. That was maybe the best offensive play of the year, and that's still, the screen pass has been so, well, maybe not like bad compared to other teams, but compared to other passes the Patriots have thrown, like, I can't remember too many other ones. A couple of guys over the middle, maybe, not a lot of deep shots downfield. I don't know if they're counting Tyquan Thornton and the pass interference. Like, that's really it, you know, there's not much else. And still, despite all that, according to PFF, again, so take it with a grain of salt, that has not been a positive call for them so far. So they haven't delivered that. They have 368 passing yards, which is very, very bad. And maybe they should try throwing more screens. You know, maybe it's just they're not doing it enough.
So, do you trust Jacoby Brissett to get the ball out of his hands quickly? Like, do you think that's
a screen pass? Yeah,
on anything.
I think he can. Sure.
Just in general, do you trust him to make quick decisions, good accurate throws, like everything that is encompassed in, whether they are screen passes or, you know, some of the stuff we've talked about, maybe quick routes to DeMario Douglas or little flares from the running backs. Like, do you trust him to mentally and physically succeed in that situation with regularity, with a guy like Bosa running down on him and a guy like Fred Warner kind of roaming that underneath?
Yes, just because I think when it comes to decision making, I think the decision's already kind of made, like on a quick snap, you know, screen like that, you just turn and throw it, unless you see the guy cheating up and ready to pick it off or something. But like, you know what I mean? There's not like, it's either I throw it right now or I hold on to it. Like, it's not, you have to go through progressions and decide who's open and decide which receiver has a step on his man or whatever. Like, all that stuff you think of when you think of a guy doing decision making. But if it's just either throw it or don't throw it, I think Brissett can do that. Yeah. I think so far he's proven that with pressure in his face, he can make that decision. Usually he just holds on to the ball. Like, he's not turning it over. So I'd say, yeah, I trust him to do that.
Okay. Now, I don't know that I do, because I've never thought of him as like a really fast processor. And you're right, it's not the same as going through progressions and any of that, but there are decisions to be made, like throw it at the guy's feet because it's going to get picked off by that defensive end who read it, or outside linebacker who read it, and some of those things.
Well, hasn't he been good at that so far this year? Hasn't that been something like one of the few things he's done well, is not make bad decisions?
Well, no, yeah. Well, they haven't thrown the ball a ton either.
That's true. Like, yeah.
It's not like he's been slinging it 50 times a game, and half the times he throws it, we know that he kind of has to run immediately, so that changes everything. That now it's a scramble drill, and you're kind of playing on the fly there. But I also don't like this idea of, so, you know, they want it to be a screen team. They wanted to be a run team. Like, why'd they have to tell everybody what they wanted to be? Like, this open nature. And I know it's counter to, oh, so you were pissed when Belichick didn't tell you anything, wouldn't tell you who's calling the plays, wouldn't tell you who the coordinator was. Now you're pissed that they have a coordinator, and he tells you what they want to do. You media types are never happy, but there's probably some value, not just flat out saying we're going to be the best screen team in the league, we're going to be the best run team in the league, that's how we're going to play. And especially if you can't live up to the own hype and predictions and boasting, right?
Right.
Like, that's a concern, too, because if you're not the best, then isn't it like, well, coach, you said you want us to be the best screen team, and we're not really that good at it, so what are we going to do now?
Let's be the best bomb it out verticals team. Like, no, you're not going to be that.
The reason
why you wanted to be the best screen team is because that's the only thing you really can be in this passing game. They were realistic about it, and I think Alex Van Pelt, at the very least, whatever you think about him, understands what he's working with here. I don't think he's got any sort of, you know, idea that he's got Patrick Mahomes back there or some kind of high powered offense. He knows what this offense is. They summed it up pretty quickly, I'd say, probably in camp. You know, this is a team that's going to have trouble protecting the quarterback. quarterback situation early on that may not be great to begin with, even with protection. And what we're going to have to do is lean on the run and short game, and that's going to be our offense. I think he figured that out right away.
Yeah, and they're not even great at aspects of that. Yeah, what are we going? What's plan B and C? What are we turning to?
I'm not sure that there is one. I think this might be it. Just to keep handing it off and keep throwing short and hope that someone breaks one. And that's it. Just do it.
Keep handing it to the guy that fumbles?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
You got a better idea?
Yeah.
You might as well.
No. Actually, no. Well, I'm still waiting. I would like a little bit more chuck it deep. I'm not going to lie, because I do think they're limited offensively. Normally, I'm not going to advocate for a team to kind of waste plays and just chuck it deep and hope to get a PI or hope to get a guy's. But I think they need to soften up defenses at least a little bit. And I know Mel Kiper, it's cover two everywhere, but I think this team has to find ways to take shots and to kind of just take a breath and make a play. I just don't know. If you're really good at it, I guess you can run the ball and screen your way to consistent offensive success. That just sounds like a really hard plan of attack. And then I always go back to, for a team, isn't a screen pass, doesn't that involve linemen blocking?
Yeah. Oh, yes. That definitely helps.
Yeah.
Helps to have some linemen blocking. And wide receivers and tight, everybody needs to block. But yes, right. Linemen certainly need to block.
But we know this line is struggling to block. So your entire offense, and I know it's hard to scheme around anything, if your line can't block, if you can't block at all. But I feel like the timing and the execution on screen passes involves a lot of the offensive line, which, A, we're not sure how good it is, and B, has been just different guys all the time. City So, Michael Jordan, Vidarian Lowe, now it's Wallace. We're how are we expecting them to be a good screen team when their talent on the line is questionable and their cohesion on the line is questionable?
Yeah, all that's very, very fair. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to the phones, talk to Joe, who is in Melrose. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. I agree with Andy. I think Jacoby Brissett's playing for his job on Sunday, and I think if they get blown out and Drake May comes in garbage time, that'll be the permanent switch that against Miami, Drake May will be in there. Initially, I thought the Patriots are going to get blown out, but listening to all the San Francisco injuries, maybe they have a chance. But also the other thing, if you look at the rest of the Patriots' schedule, once Drake May goes in there, they're going to probably be around a 500 team. A lot of the teams they play down in the middle of the season are really bad. So Patriots, it's the Dolphins twice. They get the Tennessee, the Colts, Arizona, the Bears. I mean, these are teams that even if the Patriots play like they did against Seattle, that they're going to probably win the game.
Yeah, Joe, the season does get a little easier. I mean, this is the tough part of it, which is why I think going 2-2 would be such a big accomplishment. I think that would be a major accomplishment for this group. If they can come out of this first month with a 500 record, then yeah, that opens up. That changes the entire look of the rest of this season. And even with not, let's say they give San Francisco a really good game, Andy, right? Let's say it's really close and the Niners win on a last-second field goal or something. They escape with a win at home and the Patriots, really give them a good game, May plays, and he looks really good. Then all of a sudden, that Dolphins get, you're right. I mean, the Texans are going to be tough. The Jaguars stink. The Titans stink. The Bears stink. The Rams stink. The Dolphins stink again. The Colts, Cardinals. These are all games that you looked at in the beginning of the year and thought, all right, maybe some of these are winnable. I didn't think so, but other people did. And the Patriots might get lucky in a game or two. They come out of this first month 2-2. Then all of a sudden, I'm looking at this entire schedule completely differently.
Absolutely, especially when the second win is a really good win in San Francisco. Actually, one of the things you'll start to talk about is, why are the Patriots better on the road than at home? Why can't they win games at Gillette Stadium? Because that would be something going back to last year. And I know they didn't win a lot of games anywhere last year, but they only won one at Gillette last year, right? Weren't they? One of their four wins was at Gillette, and they were 3 on the road. So
yes, they were 1-7 at home last year.
Yeah, if you beat the Bengals and then you beat the 49ers in San Francisco, that's two good road wins to open the season. And then you say, why'd you kick it away at home? Because you should be 3-1 if you had a home field advantage and beat the Seahawks. Although, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, I don't know if you're following each week that Tom Brady does his top five for Fox. He puts it out on Twitter. Top five NFL teams, power rankings. Mm-hmm. And he has Seattle as fourth, third. So that was a good loss at home to a top five NFL team.
All right, Brady's top five: Chiefs, Bills, Vikings, Seahawks, Texans. Okay, yeah there you go.
See, that's not that bad a loss.
What a take by Brady there. Top five teams in the league.
I know you're
mocking. The Cowboys aren't on there. It's all he does is do Cowboys games. I'm surprised he even knows about these other teams.
So there's a video, and it's a little stiff, but it might be the best thing I've seen him do. It's not terrible. It's like a 5-minute
where he talks
video.
About each team?
He like each pick and why he did it and blah, 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 and what's coming. And it's not terrible. It's not great. It's not $37 million. It's not earth-shattering. But it's not terrible.
All right. Well, very good. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We got room for you here on a Patriots Friday. When we come back, Thursday Night Football had a couple of teams on the Bill Watch do battle there, and it almost went sideways for the Cowboys. Not quite. And it also showed everybody the importance of having a stud wide receiver, which the Patriots most certainly do not have. We'll get to that next. Thursday Night Football last night, a NFC East matchup between the Cowboys and the Giants, two scuffling teams, one with much higher expectations than another one, I would say, certainly, as the Dallas Cowboys, I thought, were one loss away last night from firing their coach. Didn't have to because they ended up winning the game. Not by very much. Certainly didn't cover the number I saw. So that probably hurt for anybody who bet Dallas last night. Unless you, like everybody else in the world, had the CeeDee Lamb anytime touchdown, which hit. And I know that that was a big one because everybody on Twitter started going ka-ching when CeeDee Lamb took that one to the house. So what were your takeaways from the game last night? Andy, I think one that we can both certainly agree on is that it highlighted the importance of having a stud wide receiver out there that your quarterback can rely on.
Yeah, this has been one of mine all year long. And I know we still have to talk about the left tackle, and that's a thing. But that other box that needs to be checked off at some point, sometime soon, by Elliott Wolf. And they tried, you know, with your guy Ridley or with Ayuk, who they'll see this week. But you watch these games, and it's just so key to have that guy to go to. That guy can make guys fall down, can run after catch. And I'm not saying the Patriots don't have anybody that can't catch the ball or run after the catch and couldn't have a big play. But just to have that guy, you know, if he hasn't scored in a while, he's going to score soon. Or if he hasn't had a good game in a while, he's got a big day coming. Like, I think Brandon Ayuk is on the verge of a big day. Like, he's a guy that I would say feels like he's due or overdue.
I'd agree he's due.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Do the Patriots have anybody you're like, oh, that guy's due. He's overdue. There's a big day guy. You can't feel that about anybody because none of them have that kind of track record, history, reputation. So
Ramondre Stevenson is due not to fumble. He's due to hold on to the ball for an entire game. He hasn't done that yet.
That is fair. That is something they are due for. Mm-hmm. But just that marquee number one. Everybody used to make fun of that. Like, that was a big thing. Old school football hardos. Like, right. Why don't you get two wide receivers, Miami? Nice job. Probably a bad example, Andy. They've scored 33 points through two games. But, that is modern football is having a quarterback and a number one wide receiver. And as luck would not have it, the Patriots don't have a quarterback. Well, they might have a quarterback. We haven't seen him yet. And they certainly do not have that kind of a number one wide receiver like the CeeDee Lamb. And I was wrong on Lamb. A couple of years ago, I kind of thought he was overrated. I wasn't sure what he was. I watched, you know, he would have some drops and he would have some attitude things. And he still kind of has the attitude things because I think that's what you get when you get those superstar wide receivers.
Yeah, but usually.
He's freaking good, and Malik Nabers looks like he's freaking good. Like, he freaked that Booth kid out. He fell down. He's stumbling all over himself, bumbling himself.
And he's doing it with a bad quarterback, too.
Right. Like, so that's got to be on the to-do list. You got to get one of them. And I don't know. I know people have soured on T. Higgins. Watching that game the other night, people were like, I used to be in on the T. Higgins plan. I'm not sure I'm in on the T. Higgins plan. Okay, we'll find a new plan. I don't care if it's T. Higgins. You got to find one of those guys. Because Jalen Polk, remember that tweet that PFF put out or somebody put out? It was like the Patriots have their number one and number two wide receivers for years to come in Polk and Baker. Get the hell out of here right now.
I know. That's unfortunate. And really, there's been such a wide receiver renaissance. I mean, really, it's been wild. The last four or five drafts have produced so many productive receivers. And maybe that speaks to the way the NFL's going now. Like, it could be just as simple as that. But going back to, like, the N'Keal Harry draft, which is the one I always sort of look at as the port in the storm here, that had Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, etc. Terry McLaurin was that year. You had legitimate blue chippers there. In 2020, you had CeeDee Lamb. You had Justin Jefferson. You had T. Higgins. You had Michael Pittman. 2021 had Chase Waddle, Smith. I mean, it was just all these really every year. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. The 2023 class with Smith and Jigba and Flowers and Addison and Rasheed Rice and Tank Dell. Like, every year it seems like all these great wide receivers get drafted, they're productive right away, and the Patriots can't ever sniff any of them. Like, no matter what round they're drafted in, no matter where it happens, the Patriots will take a stab at it every couple years with N'Keal Harry or with Tyquan Thornton, and then again now with Polk and, you know, some of these other guys, and we'll see what Polk turns into. But with all these very good receivers getting drafted every year, it really does seem like the Patriots are cursed, doesn't it?
And it seems like you have to draft one. That's my next concern.
Yeah.
Is that there was that couple year window where they were all being traded, Diggs and AJ Brown and Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
And now it's like everybody's decided it's kind of dumb to give up on those guys. Why don't we just sign them and give them $35 million? And now some teams are even doing the double dip. Like Philly re-signed AJ Brown, re-signed Devontae Smith. You look down in Miami where you might have said, well, you can't have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Well, why can't you? That was their response. And all these teams, and it looks like the Bengals, everybody assumes, can't keep Chase and Higgins, but if they go down the path everybody else is going down, the 49ers with Debo and Ayuk, it may be harder to, because I was under the belief you were going to have to draft the quarterback, you were going to have to draft the tackle, and you could find the wide receiver somewhere. I'm less confident now that you can just find that true number one wide receiver. You can find a receiver, like your boy, Calvin Ridley. Like, mm-hmm. I think there will be guys available at times, but I don't know if you're going to get a real number one wide receiver on the open market anymore. And that's concerning because that means now you have to hit on the left tackle in the draft and you have to hit on a wide receiver in the draft.
Yeah, and I think that in terms of that, like, if you want a left tackle that's serviceable, right, the guy who can play, a guy who can start for you, who may not ever be a Pro Bowler or an elite tackle in the league, but someone who can go out there and do it, you know, like you don't really have that right now. And I think that there's, you know, something to that. Like, can he play? Can he get better? Is he going to start off and be a stud right away? You know, like the Joe Alt guys who get picked in the lottery. I don't necessarily need that. But at wide receiver, I think it's starting to skew more in that direction. It just seems like that's the natural progression of it right now. They're about as hot as quarterbacks are, right?
I see what you're doing here.
What am I doing?
You're already starting with the Patriots need to take Travis Hunter in the top five picks of the draft next year.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I'd take, in the top five, I would take a wide. It doesn't have to be Hunter. If someone else emerges who's better than him, I'd go with that. But I would go wide receiver in the top five and then try and find the tackle later on. Absolutely, I'd prioritize it that way, 100%.
Yeah, see, I might have to rethink my plan. The famous Andy Hart plan that was written about, talked about, that was all over social media.
Everywhere.
I may have to rethink because Travis Hunter would be definitely in my conversation. He has grown on. It's funny. Shador, I've lost all interest, which I never had any.
Right.
Dion, I hate. But Travis Hunter, the more I watch Colorado and the more I see Travis Hunter play, the more I think Travis Hunter is the best football player, certainly at the college level on the planet, and one of the best overall football players. Like, when you say you have a guy that can catch a ball and run like Tyreek Hill, explosive, just absolutely explosive, and then he's making goal line stands where he's putting his helmet on the football, lighting guys up. I mean, how many guys are there on the planet that, like, and these comparisons to Charles Woodson, I mean, no disrespect to a Hall of Famer in Charles Woodson, he didn't play every play both ways.
No, like, no, he didn't. He didn't play the whole game, that's for sure.
Right.
Hunter plays the whole game.
Travis Hunter and Shohei Ohtani are the unicorns on the planet right now. They really are. Like, if you were going to do a sports unicorn list, Travis Hunter and Shohei Ohtani are on that short list.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. By the way, tomorrow 3:30, the Central Florida Knights have a black and gold stampede heading their way. And yeah, you watch out. Travis Hunter, Shador, the whole team's coming for you there. Central Florida, 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We'll take a quick break. We'll continue on a Patriots Friday with the three biggest reasons for concern and the three biggest reasons to have hope on Sunday. We'll do that next.